All right, let's open our Bibles again to John, and let's turn to chapter 10. Lord willing, more or less introducing this chapter today, and won't be able to spend too much time on it now, because basically I just want to kind of get into it so that, Lord willing, on Sunday morning we can look more into the chapter. So we're in this third movement of John still, which would entail chapters 5 to 11, where we see the oppositions to the Son of God. We, of course, see time and again in these chapters where we see the term the Jews and how that they would oppose him. The first situation in chapter 5, we see he healed a lame man on the Sabbath day, and then the dialogue that followed, they end up, the Jews, with two reasons for wanting to take him. He had healed someone on the Sabbath, and then he clearly made himself to be God, and neither made them happy. So we see from that point on, in these middle chapters, we see continued opposition. However, in every chapter, we see an opportunity the Lord takes the narrative and uses that for a dialogue to teach about himself and to carry on the theme of the book of John, his deity. And so he would continually in these chapters point out that he must go away, and that he and the Father work as one, that the Father sent him. And so he keeps reiterating these same themes within the narrative. And many of the narratives of this section would be where the I ams of John are found. And so he said, "I am the bread of life," when he fed the multitude there in chapter 6. Chapter 8 and 9, he spoke of being, "I am the light of the world." And the context there was of sin. In chapter 8, a woman was brought before him caught in adultery, and he was able to address that as he was the light of the world. In chapter 9, he healed the blind man. Again, contrasting light and darkness. "I am the light of the world." So we come to chapter 10, and we actually have a couple of I ams. There'll be another one in the next chapter with Lazarus when he says, "I am the resurrection of life," with the context of raising Lazarus. But here in chapter 10, I want to think about really today just mainly the first six verses. We find he will acknowledge, "I am the door and I am the good shepherd," in this chapter. And so with the background of the oppositions to the Son of God, just keep in mind at the end of chapter 9, the Lord had made it known that these Pharisees, which had issue with him healing a blind man on the Sabbath, well, really the bigger point was that they were spiritually blind, and therefore they were blind about the sin problem that they needed to deal with. And ultimately they rejected Christ. And so with that backdrop, we come into chapter 10 and we read verse 1, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. When he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger they will not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them." And so with this, as we see in verse 6, the term parable or a similitude. It's interesting, the term parable is used many times in Matthew and Luke, not so much in Mark or John. Nonetheless, we see here this parable. And so he's going to give these analogies. As you get further in the chapter, we're going to think of these metaphors such as, "I am the door." And so he'll elaborate on the truth of that in the following verses. But as we see here in verse 1, we want to make a distinction between what's said in this parable, the early verses, as opposed to what he's saying later. He's kind of setting the stage here. Verse 1, when he says, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber." And so he makes that contrast also with verse 2. And he's speaking of himself, but he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. So here he's talking about the shepherd entering in by the door. So that's different than later on when he's talking about how I am the door, and that sheep need to enter in by him, and we think of salvation and so on. But first, here he's talking about the shepherd entering in by the door. So he's contrasting that himself with those that are a thief and a robber. So again, here it is in this time, this section of John, when we find all the opposition. Those that were spiritually blind, he had just been talking to, and they didn't understand, or they didn't want to hear the truth. And so as they oppose him, he's pointing out that he's the shepherd. He's the one that has come in by the door. As you read further, it mentions a porter. We'll notice that a couple verses down. We'll see that in a moment. But the shepherd himself enters in. He's the one the Old Testament has been talking about. He's the one, the Messiah, that time and again was saying he will come. And it describes both his first and his second advent. And so when you think in those terms, that term, the sheepfold in verse 1, it seems to be speaking of the Lord's coming to Israel. He has come. He is the one that is back in the beginning of the Gospels, even here in John. John the Baptist spoke of. He was the forerunner. He was the one preparing the way. And so who's going to enter in, as it were, to the sheepfold? Here's the one, their Messiah. Ironically, in this section of John, they keep rejecting him. And yet he's the one, verse 2, the one that enters in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. And so then we see, as we go on, verse 1, we saw thief and robber. We think of those that have, well, the false teachers, those that are not the Messiah, those who are not the one the Old Testament time and again spoke of that would come to Israel and would be their Messiah. He's the one here, the true one, is the one that they by and large reject. So verse 3, to him the porter openeth. Again, some suggest this would be an inference to John the Baptist, perhaps, the one that was the one preparing the way, the one that was saying the Messiah, this one that's preferred before me, John would say. I must decrease, he must increase, the Lord is spoken of by John the Baptist. And so as we notice there, this is a contrast to what later we see when we're going to talk about the Good Shepherd and the Lord, what he does in saving souls. Here we see him coming in and as the Messiah, coming in as the one that's making the offer to Israel, but they reject. And so with this, it's interesting to think back how much was actually said in the Old Testament about him. Just a few pages before Luke 24, that familiar passage, when he's on that road to Emmaus, and he would speak about things concerning himself from the Old Testament scriptures. In Luke 24, again, this is fast-forwarding time-wise to his post-resurrection ministry, but 24:27, and beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. And we see a similar note there in verse 44 when he mentions the things written in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms. So that's describing the general aspects of the Old Testament. It spoke about himself, the Lord Jesus says. So whether we walk through and remind ourselves of the Psalms, the Messianic Psalms, like chapter 2 of Psalms, we see him as the king. We see him as the son in chapter 8. We see him as the resurrected one in 16. In 22, we see, looking back at the cross, 23, we think him presently, as we see in this chapter, as the shepherd. 24 is looking future to the king. 40, we see him as pictured through the burnt sacrifice, giving himself wholly unto God. 41, we see a reminder of how there will be that Judas Iscariot that would be the one that would betray him. And then we see 45, I believe, maybe another reference to him as the coming king. 68, we see the ascension that Ephesians talks about, the one that will that ascended on high. 69, we see him as the trespass offering. 89, another reference to him as the king and the one of the throne. 102, he's the immutable God that Hebrews talks about. 110, he's the one, the high priest after the order of Melchizedek. And 118, he's the chief cornerstone. So those are like a dozen and a half psalms. They're messianic psalms. And so that's just a sampling of the things the Old Testament had to say, looking toward that one that would come. And then you can go through in a similar way in Isaiah and see various reference after reference after reference, particularly chapter 53, of details about the Messiah that would come hundreds of years later. And so now we see he's the shepherd of the sheep. He's the one that would come in by the door. And we see he's the one that is the Messiah. And so with that, we notice there in verse 4, 5, and 6, we see this word, a voice. And so that's interesting. Verse 4, and when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they shall not know the voice of strangers. There's a contrast. And I believe you saw it back in verse 3 as well. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice. So we see voice, verse 3, 4, and 5. It's kind of interesting how, if you go back to the beginning of this section, chapter 5, when he was talking about his perfect unity with the Father, there he mentioned the term voice a few times. For example, 5:25, you might recall, verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. Verse 28, marvel not at this, for the hour is coming, in that which all that are in the grave shall hear his voice. And then verse 37, and the Father himself, which has sent me, hath borne witness of me. Ye have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his shape. And so again, talking to those that were opposing him, he was speaking time and again about aspects of how he and the Father were one. They were working, always work in perfect unity. And so he brings that term voice before us. We'll go back to our text of John 10. Later on in the next part of the study, we'll see he'll mention the word voice again in chapter 10. He'll pick up in verse 16 and 27 as well. So when we think of this thought of hearing a voice, it's in a sense it's responding. Who will, as he sometimes says, you will not, who will hear his voice? Who will respond to him? Who will accept him, and who's going to keep opposing him as the true Messiah? Who is going to hear his voice? So in John 10, we see, of course, verse 5 shows the opposite of following the true Lord is, he talks about they know not the voice of strangers, and so on. Well, we see this kind of just tied up there in verse 6 where it mentions that this is a parable. And they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. And so here from the end of chapter 9, those that were spiritually blind, In like manner, here's a parable they don't understand. And so when you see parables, again, Matthew and Luke, more so, we're reminded of ones that have eyes but cannot see, those that have ears but cannot hear. You think of some of the prophets use that type of language. And so the Lord would spell things out, and he would use parables, he'd use metaphors, he would use allegories. And those that would not hear did not understand these parables, it seems. So with that, I'm going to stop there. Lord willing, we'll pick up Sunday at verse 7 and try to get into I am the door and I am the good shepherd. So I'll just stop, and if any of the brothers want to add something to